This encore program for Fire on the Earth was chosen based on the request from many listeners.
Fire on the Earth. Our Holy Father has said the Church is missionary by her very nature. The Church exists to evangelize. He's called for a new springtime of evangelization. To help us obtain the tools each of us needs to answer the Church's call, this is Fire on the Earth. Here is our host, Peter Herbeck.
Welcome to Fire on the Earth. This is Peter Herbeck, your host, and we're beginning another week of Fire on the Earth, a program dedicated to the promotion of Catholic mission and evangelization. I'm delighted to be able to introduce to you this week a guest, Cynthia Rutherford. Cynthia works for Renewal Ministries. She's one of our most creative people on our staff, and she puts together our newsletter for us and does a whole lot of other things. But she also has an amazing story, really, of how God's love was poured into her heart at a time of real difficulty and trial. And the Lord brought her from a place of struggle and darkness to a place of freedom and life and light and blessing. And so she shared with me and with Sister Ann Shields a year or so ago her story on a ride home from Toronto. And I thought, wow, God is good, and what an amazing story, and someday we've got to get you on the radio. So we made it this far, and Cynthia's joining us today. Welcome, Cynthia.
Thanks, Peter. It's a privilege to be here.
Yeah, I'm so glad. I'm so glad you came. So glad you're here. And why don't you share with our listeners just a little bit about your background?
Well, I came from, I think, what many would consider an upper-middle-class family. We had sort of everything going for us, and it was a very normal life. I was raised Protestant. Not a lot of practicing of our faith in the family. We went to church on Sunday. We didn't pray at home. Really, that was about the extent of it. I think I remember in third grade when I rejected religion. In my parochial school, I asked my teacher, well, where do the dinosaurs fit in to the story of creation? And she couldn't answer me because I was such a smart kid.
Yeah, you're precocious third
yes,
grader. Yeah.
I said, I knew it. This is just a story.
You figured it out.
I think I remember that that's when it happened. And from then on, I just went through the motions at my parochial school. We had to memorize scripture, and it never meant anything to me. It went in one ear and out the other. And I don't remember ever feeling like I knew God. In fact, I don't remember anyone ever speaking to me about knowing God, about having a personal relationship with God.
Yeah.
So I didn't really understand, and it wasn't helpful to me. When I got to high school, I went to a public school, and that was the time when I was introduced to a wider variety of people, and I was instantly drawn to sort of the wrong kind of people. First, I started smoking. I wasn't one of those kids who coughed the first time they smoked. The first time I smoked like I've been smoking for 20 years, and I loved it. I started drinking. I started stealing alcohol from my parents' liquor cabinet. And my parents rarely drank. And I remember one time they were having some kind of a get-together, and they were preparing for the company, and most of the liquor was gone. There was quite a lot of liquor, and most of it was gone. And that's when they started thinking, maybe I had a problem. Surprisingly, I never thought it was a problem. I just thought that I was just this kind of person, that I was just, I just chose this kind of lifestyle. But I was always drawn to darkness like that. And I see that now when I look back on it. I see that I was blinded.
Did you have, at the time, were there other young folks or just a crowd they ran with and everybody thought the same, pretty much doing the same things? And so you feel like, hey, this is just who we are, and it's not that big of a deal, and people do this, and...
Exactly.
Were you still an A student at that time? Were the balls in the air, all the other things in your life, or were things beginning to crumble and you were just getting disinterested and disconnected from all that stuff too?
Things were beginning to crumble. Okay. I mean, I kept a little thread on things that I actually enjoyed, like dancing. I danced for 13 years. But when it came to school and things like that, I didn't see how it was important in my life, and I didn't feel any sense of responsibility. I became very self-centered. I had no respect for my parents anymore. And now that I'm an adult, I see this all around me. And it's so transparent. It's so easy to see what's going on now. But I understand that when you're in that place, without the grace of God, you cannot see out. It's like the windows of your soul are darkened by sin.
Yeah. So this is about, what, junior in high school or something? Or
I think that all through high school, I was just sort of on a very slow downward spiral. It wasn't until I left home my sophomore year in college. I dropped out of college. Actually, I dropped out of art school, and I moved to Ann Arbor. Most people would think that I moved to Ann Arbor to go to school, but I actually dropped out of school and moved to Ann Arbor basically for sex, drugs, and rock and roll. There was a lot going on here. There was a great subculture here, and I was already somewhat a part of it. I would come here and stay on weekends, and I didn't really see any problem with sort of living as a hobo, you know, back then. I felt very comfortable hanging out with strangers in dark alleys and things like that. It's really strange when I think about it now, but it was so easy and so natural for me then.
It was part of the experience in Ann Arbor, just a lot of people who were doing it, the connect
oh,
with.
Yeah.
I mean,
it was very
subculture. It was just people who were into mostly partying and hanging out and
And you know, the music, like the local music scene, and we really liked punk rock music was sort of the thing. There's also a big subculture of, you know, where we did a lot of LSD and hung out in Detroit and danced to, at the time it was called house music, and we would just be tranced for 8 hours dancing in Detroit. So yeah, it was easy. It was easy when I came to Ann Arbor because there were a lot more people like me here than in the small town where I grew up. There was a certain amount of rejection from the other young people in the place that I grew up. And obviously rejection from my parents because they didn't like the way I was living. So I felt like I belonged when I got here.
You had a sense of community or something even from these folks, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I really started to feel more like it was okay to live this way because I was on my own.
Even in the midst of it, did you, you know, he's talking about using LSD and dancing for 8 hours and you come down off the stuff or whatever the next day. Did you ever have moments and feelings like, I don't really like where I'm going, or there's something about this that just isn't right, or I think I'm checking out of life? And did you experience anything like that at the time?
Nope.
Yeah.
No, nothing. It wasn't for quite some time, actually. Yeah. I began to be somewhat successful in my using career. I found that I was able to, I had to work to survive, to make some money and to buy drugs. So I found that even though I had been high for a number of years, I was still smart enough to function and sort of put on an air of responsibility for people. And I had a number of great jobs for years. And right before my eyes were opened, anyone who were to look at my life would have thought that I had everything going for me. I was in, right before I got sober, I was in my early 30s. I was traveling. I had a beautiful apartment and a nice car and a great job. And you would have thought from the outside that things were great for me, like I had always thought things were great for me. And it wasn't until there was a little crack in my shell and a tiny bit of light shined in that I started having second thoughts about the way that I was living.
Even when you had these jobs that had a lot of responsibility and the rest of it, you were able to keep all the balls in your, were you regularly using during those times? And what would that look like? I mean, what would that look like? You know, you had to put on an air of responsibility and that you can handle a job. How do you handle those things? How do you live in two worlds like that?
It wasn't really two worlds. They were sort of meshed together. I was high all day long, every day. Hmm. I only drank in the evenings, but I would smoke pot. And toward the end, I was using cocaine regularly through the day, which became very cumbersome. That was made it a little bit more difficult to function in the normal world. And that may have been what brought me down, finally.
Mm-hmm. So in the midst of all that, you said a kind of crack began to emerge in what seemed like the world you were choosing for yourself and that you were pretty happy with at that point. And then something began to change. What was that?
It's funny because I didn't have any intentions of changing. I always kind of fantasized about my life going forward, that I would be single, that I would live alone, that basically things would just be like they were, that I would support myself and make a lot of money and treat myself right. But something happened when someone came to work at the place that I worked, and there was something different about this person. Something that I liked, that I wasn't turned off by, like I normally had been. I didn't know that this person was a Christian or a Catholic, and that probably helped. I remember this person's house burned down, and they got a call at work telling them that their house had burned down and they lost all their possessions. And he laughed. And I thought, what? What kind of a reaction is that?
What planet are you from?
Yeah. And there was just something about this person always being ready to serve people who needed help when they would come into work. And even people who would, I would be very irritated with, he would kind of swoop in and take over. And I remember asking him, you know, why it was he was like that. And he didn't say it had anything to do with God, but I said, well, you're just younger than me and you're not, you know, you're not as jaded as I am. So this person slowly began to make me ask myself some questions. And when he became homeless, I said, well, come to my house for dinner. You know, you have nowhere to go. I will feed you. And hospitality was one of my, what I found out later, charisms. And so, you know, I made a big dinner and he came over and I said, and what would you like to drink? He said, just water, maybe a cup of coffee. I don't drink. And I thought, what? I've never heard of such a thing. And we sat down to dinner and I put my bottle of wine on the table and I proceeded to drink two bottles of wine while we talked. And he told me all about Alcoholics Anonymous.
Wow.
And I had never even considered getting sober. I had never thought that I had a problem. And this was all news to me. News that would eventually change my life. So I went on for maybe two more weeks living the way that I was, seeing this person regularly at work. And I just came to a point where I started realizing my pain. I started realizing that I wasn't okay with the way that I was living and that I was covering up all this pain with the drugs. And there was some little bit of me that wanted truth and authenticity. And I thought, maybe this new thing that I've just heard up, you know, heard about was something that I wanted. And I asked this friend of mine, tell me more about these meetings and when is there one?
Yeah. And so that's when the turning point became, boy, this show went fast. We only have a few seconds left in the program, but just want to let listeners know, Cynthia and I, we're going to continue this conversation tomorrow. This is a great, kind of great moment of transition, but the light's beginning to shine. There's some truth coming into your life. Your heart's opening up to truth. And friends, I encourage you to tune in tomorrow to the program. Ask your friends to tune in because it's a beautiful story. It's just a human story. It's the kind of story that the Lord does, the kind of thing the Lord does in lives all over the world all the time. And we just want to honor and glorify him. And Cynthia's, we'll tell you more about the wonderful things God's done for her and for her family in the days ahead. So if you want to join us again tomorrow, we'll be here 6:30 in the morning as well as 10:15 in the morning Eastern Standard Time. God bless you. Have a wonderful day.
This has been Fire on the Earth. It's heard here Monday through Friday at this time. Our host has been Peter Herbeck, Vice President of Missions at Renewal Ministries. You can contact Peter or listen again to this program on the web at renewalministries.net. Fire on the Earth is brought to you by Ave Maria Radio.
Friends, I'm delighted to be able to offer you my new booklet, The New Evangelization, What's Our Message? At the heart of the new evangelization is a fresh proclamation of the gospel. But for many people, even many Catholics, they wonder, what is the message? What exactly is at the heart of that proclamation? In this simple booklet, The New Evangelization, What's Our Message? I take a look at and present in a very specific and simple way what is the core of what we're called to proclaim in this great and important missionary moment in the history of the church. If you'd like a free copy, call 1-800-282-4789. That's 1-800-282-4789.